Welcome to Miss Maple Mysteries, a collection of cozy crime stories written and performed by Kathy McClellan, with production and additional voices by John Nolan, Rosemary Nolan, and William Ballack. Episode 8, A Fine Romance, Part 2. In the first part of the story, Mabel met four young women, Paige Sauvé and her baby Quinn, Nicole Paquette, Courtney Nairn, and Jaden Lee. Each of these women lost something after a romantic picnic at Princess Louise Falls. Now Mabel invites them all to share their stories in her backyard. Chapter 3, Choral Voices. On Saturday, I set up a small circle of lawn chairs in my backyard with a blanket in the center for Quinn. The ground cover is a biodiverse mixture of grass, clover, dandelions, and wildflowers, but I had neatened it up with the lawnmower and pulled a few weeds out of the three-sided border that wafted attractively in the breeze. A messy mix of about-to-bloom hydrangea, budding tiger lilies, and wilting peonies. I put some tall glasses on a side table with lemonade and iced tea and added a few cookies. I was all set for the visit and, I hoped, all set to find out more about an unscrupulous crook. Quinn was just 6 months old, and Paige proudly showed us how they could sit up by themselves. But the watchful mum sat on the blanket too, ever ready to catch the baby's constant toppling over. Maggie Mae curled into a ball under my chair, unsure of how to react to this unexpected visitor with the intriguing collection of small, colorful objects. Quinn picked each toy up, one after another, shook it and banged it to see if it made a noise, then gummed it to continue the investigation with their mouth. Our investigation, meanwhile, began with a discussion of pickup lines.
"He asked me if I was wearing contacts,"
said Nicole, munching on a cookie.
"Because my eyes were so impossibly blue."
Paige laughed.
"That's actually not bad. He came up to me after work and said, 'Excuse me, but were you talking to me?' And when I said no, he said, 'Well then please start. You've got some beautiful curves, but your smile is my favorite.'"
Nicole guffawed.
"He didn't. I mean, you do have a great smile, but..."
Paige blinked.
"But I'm a little sensitive about my curves, my post-baby body. And it was clever of him to turn that vulnerability into a compliment,"
said Jaden.
"Yes,"
said Paige.
"And you know what? It worked. I went with him. I have a ridiculously busy schedule, I'm exhausted all the time, I'm constantly on call at home and at work, and I knew it was cheesy and dorky, but that goofiness almost made me feel sorry for him, and it made me laugh. So I said yes to the coffee, yes to the picnic, and you've got to be kidding me, but yes, to the stupid let's close our eyes game." "Oh, Lord, the eye-closing game,"
said Nicole.
"I was like, what is this, Hippieville? But I did it, and he handed me the flowers, which was so lame. They were dandelions and ragweed, for heaven's sake. But who had ever given me flowers before? I grew up in a rough-and-tumble family of brothers. It's like I was one of the boys. So I thought, okay, your pants are too short. You wear too much body spray, you smell like an ashtray, and your mustache looks fake, but thank you very much, Ken Hartford."
Paige laughed.
"Ken Hartford? He told me he was Ren Hathaway."
Jaden piped up.
"I got Ben Haggerty. What name did he have for the girl from Party Mart?"
"Len Hernando," I said, and for some reason this caused the others to scream with laughter. Jaden finger-combed her dark bangs and let them fall back diagonally across her forehead.
"I feel like I'm hardwired to be helpful,"
she said.
"Third-generation immigrant from Hong Kong. Both sets of grandparents live on our street. Strong family values that stress politeness at all costs."
She shrugged and smiled self-deprecatingly.
"He came up to me near the transitway, all serious and innocent, and asked me if I had a map. So, of course, I stopped. I figured he needed directions to the right bus. And then he said he needed a map because he got lost in my eyes.
The others groaned. Quinn banged a toy on the ground with a cry like, bad, 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 and fell over. We all laughed. So he waylaid everyone right after work? I asked. They nodded.
I served him at the Canadian Tire cash. Then he appeared in the parking lot at quitting time.
She slid out of her chair, dropped onto the blanket beside the baby, picked up a rattle, waved it at Quinn, then bent to examine the intricate arrangement of spirals inside it. I smiled. Engineers, I thought, are as inquisitive as babies. It was also nice to see Quinn's mom looking happier than when I last saw her at the pool. What about you, Paige? Where do you work? Paige shifted a bit from sitting on her knees to a more comfortable crossed legs position.
I'm not supposed to talk about work. It's kind of hush-hush.
We all nodded, thoughtfully. Quinn maneuvered themselves into their mother's lap and rooted around until Paige lifted her shirt and nursed them.
That sure didn't stop him from trying to guess. So many questions. Do I always work with the same partner? Do I work in one place, or does the work take me here and there? Do I get a lunch break? How many hours do I work, and what's the schedule? He was trying to make a game of it, like 20 questions. I kept saying no comment, and he kept saying he loves a woman of mystery. It was a bit of a relief when he asked me to close my eyes so he could play Witch Hand with my charm bracelet.
He asked me a lot of questions about work, too,
said Jaden. She took a sip of lemonade, leaving a delicate red lipstick line on the glass.
It began with, tell me about a time you handled a difficulty at the bank. And, ooh, you're so good at what you do. But then it was, set the scene for me. Where were you standing? How do you count the money? Where's the vault? How do people get into the safety deposit boxes? When he showed an interest in my grandmother's jade brooch, I was just happy he'd changed the subject.
Quinn was asleep. We held our breath as Paige slowly transferred the child to the portable car seat which was beside her on the ground. She carefully snapped the buckle and gently rocked the seat back and forth.
Afternoon nap,
she cooed.
Perfect timing.
Maggie May came out from under my chair, stretched out protectively beside Quinn, and went to sleep. A tone pinged, and everyone checked their phone.
Not so perfect,
said Paige.
That's me. Someone is throwing up at work, and they want me to go in right away.
She frowned.
It'll take me an hour to take Quinn home and get her settled with her babysitter. But they need me now, or the whole schedule is thrown off.
How long will you be? I asked.
A couple of hours, just to finish the shift.
I could see an easy solution. Would you like to leave Quinn here?
Oh no, I couldn't impose.
She looked around the circle, then uncertainly at her messages.
We can help look after her, or him,
said Jaden, smiling.
I'm happy to sit here, drink lemonade, and play with toys all afternoon,
added Nicole.
As long as that's okay with Mabel.
No problem, I said. You've just fed them, and they're asleep. I think we'll be fine. Paige texted her boss, and I walked her through the house to the front door.
I can't use my phone at work,
she said,
but I'll send you my employer's number in case there's an emergency.
Sounds good. I opened the door and grinned. Is your car yellow? I asked, pointing at three yellow cars parked across the street. Paige laughed.
Yes, mine's the smart car in the middle. It's teeny, but it's perfect for the two of us, and the price was hard to beat. I got it secondhand.
We said goodbye, and I watched her swing into the cute little vehicle and drive away with a cheery wave. The yellow car behind her started up and pulled away too, a bumblebee and a wasp buzzing down the road. When I rejoined my guests in the backyard, they were kneeling by the car seat in some consternation. Jaden spoke first.
Did Paige say anything about Quinn having allergies?
Nicole moved aside to let me see.
There seems to be a bit of a rash on the face and hands.
I remember something about sensitive skin, I said. She slathered her, I mean them, with Vaseline after swimming lessons.
I'm going to move them out of the sun,
said Nicole.
It was shady earlier, but maybe it's too bright now.
Slowly and gently, she moved the car seat to between the two chairs. Maggie May got up, sniffed the toys, and shifted to a new sleeping position beside the baby.
Let's call her to check,
said Jaden.
What's her phone number?
I don't like to call her while she's driving, I said. The other two looked at me. Young people talk to each other in moving vehicles all the time, but I don't think it's safe. She gave me her employer's number, though. I'll call them and leave a message for her. I put the phone on speaker and dialed. A brisk voice picked up on the first ring.
Good afternoon, Brinks. How can I help?
Brinks, I said. The armored car company?
Yes, ma'am. How can I direct your call?
I'd like to leave a message for one of your employees.
We don't give out information on our employees.
Her name is Paige Sove. I'm babysitting for her, and I need to know if the baby has allergies.
I can't confirm that we have anyone by that name working for us.
Okay, but if you do, will you give her the message?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I can't promise to do that.
I thanked him and hung up. Jaden sat up on the cusp of a brilliant insight.
She drives an armored car.
Presumably, I said, with a bit of an eye roll, but it can't be confirmed or denied.
No, I know for sure. I remember now. I've seen her deliver money at the bank, maybe with different hair.
And maybe pregnant at some point,
laughed Nicole, still on the ground, surrounded by toys. She tucked a blanket over Quinn and added softly,
with this flawless result.
I smiled at Nicole, then turned back to Jaden. A bank and an armored car? Are you seeing a connection?
Let's call Party Mart,
she said,
and see what he asked the other girl about. Did you say her name was Courtney?
I nodded. Courtney Nairn. She picked up her phone and moved away. I sat beside Nicole, who seemed completely enraptured. What did he ask about Canadian Tire, Nicole? She stroked the baby's cheeks with the tips of her fingers.
So many things.
She looked up.
He bought cable ties and duct tape. I remember joking about him using them to kidnap someone.
My heart skipped a beat. Jaden finished her call and came back to us.
Well, that was weird.
I stood up. Did you get her?
Yes, but it must have been a bad connection. She didn't seem to know what I was talking about until I mentioned the picnic and the missing earrings and asked if she remembered the conversation. Then she said, yeah, it was like he was obsessed with two things, latex masks and gender reveal smoke bombs.
I'm calling Charlie Egan, I said, pressing his number on my speed dial.
Who's Charlie Egan?
Asked Jaden. A policeman friend.
Good,
said Nicole, getting up in alarm.
Because now that I think about it, of all the Canadian Tire products, what he kept coming back to was how to buy a gun.
Chapter 4, Call and Response. The closest patrol car, at the Tim Hortons on Saint Joseph, got to the Place d'Orleans Shopping Center Scotiabank entrance in minutes. The two officers pulled up beside a large white Brinks truck at the sidewalk. An elderly black man in dark work coveralls stood by the windshield of the Brinks truck, waving his phone at the driver, who had opened the door and was about to step out of the vehicle, her face pale with terror. The officers jumped out of their car. Police! Freeze! The dark man spun around, dropped a smoke bomb, and disappeared in an inky blue cloud.
He had a picture of Quinn,
said the Brinks truck driver, her eyes streaming from the smoke and the stress.
He said he'd hurt my baby if I didn't do what he said.
An hour later, after a few phone calls back and forth while I filled him in on my conversations with the young women, Charlie brought Paige back to my house while another officer drove her car. Quinn's rash had subsided shortly after Nicole moved the car seat out of the sun, and now the baby reached out for Paige. Nicole sat with the two of them in the backyard as they played patty cake, rattled a few toys, then settled down in a lawn chair to nurse. Maggie May greeted her good friend Charlie effusively, then went back to her on-guard position beside the baby. Jaden wanted to know every detail, but Charlie shook his head.
I don't know what the idea was, other than holding up an armored car. An elaborate plan, but was it a good one? Maybe we'll never know.
I looked at him sharply. What do you mean you'll never know?
An elderly black man disappears in a cloud of smoke. No fingerprints, no DNA. Nobody with a similar MO. How are we ever going to find him?
Well, for starters, I said, he's not an elderly black man. I'm pretty sure that was a latex mask. And he drives a yellow car. I'm not great on cars, but I think it was a newer model Volkswagen.
Okay,
he said, pulling out his phone.
We can check the traffic feed. But what have you got against yellow Volkswagens?
When Paige left here this afternoon, another car followed her. I barely glimpsed the person behind the wheel, but the profile was familiar, and it's been driving me crazy ever since.
And?
And Maggie May might just have a fingerprint for you.
Maggie May. Detective's dog or dog detective?
He grinned as Maggie May perked up and wagged her tail.
How does Maggie May collect fingerprints?
Maggie May is such an indisputed cutie pie that even hardened criminals can't resist her. I think the driver of the yellow Volkswagen was the same person I talked to outside the bank. Jaden looked startled.
Courtney Nairn? But I talked to her at Party Mart. She has an alibi.
You talked to the real Courtney Nairn, who didn't know about our meeting today. I met the imposter, who stole her earrings and copied her look, who loves to dress up in disguise. Very handy if you need to case the bank several times or try to track the armored car schedule. He followed you in one get-up to see how you liked your coffee, and loitered inside and outside the bank in another outfit on the day I went in. He listened to our conversation and wanted to hear more in case we got close. The nerve of him, pretending to be allergic to Maggie May just to disguise his voice. Then today he followed Paige. Why? It sounds like Brinks doesn't announce their schedule. He couldn't get the info he needed from Paige, but he heard me tell you that she was on call today. When I told him about our meeting, he decided to park across the street and follow her if it looked like she was called in. Work is about the only place she ever goes without Quinn. When he saw her leave my house without the baby, he guessed she was off to work, and it was finally time to put his plan in motion. Charlie finished texting about tracking yellow Volkswagens and looked up.
And the fingerprints?
Let's check Maggie May's collar. Chapter 5, Coda. It took a few months, but eventually all the stolen trinkets and treasures were returned to their owners. He'd even swiped a dog tag from Maggie May's collar, which I didn't notice until we checked it for fingerprints.
You're lucky he didn't steal Maggie May. He said he wanted to, but he didn't get the chance.
Charlie figured he was a kleptomaniac. He had to steal things, especially things that meant a lot to people. He couldn't help himself. It was his Achilles heel. In late September, we gathered in my backyard to hear Charlie describe how they'd finally tracked down Ben Hegarty, a.k.a. Ken Hartford, a.k.a. Ren Hathaway, a.k.a. Len Hernando. As it happened, his prints were on file from an unfortunate event in college. After high school in Orleans, he took computer engineering at Algonquin. One night, some kids in residence organized a party with alcohol and other substances, and sadly, a young man was stabbed. Fingerprints on the knife led to a quick arrest and the young man recovered, but all the case notes, including everyone's identification, went into the database. Charlie traced our culprit to Fallingbrook, the Orleans neighborhood named after the Princess Louise Falls, where he lived in his parents' basement, surrounded by video games. Jaden and I were surprised to see Paige and Nicole arrive together. One way and another, their friendship had blossomed since the robbery attempt, and there was even talk of them moving in together. Charlie checked something on his phone while Jaden and I watched Quinn take tentative steps from Paige to Nicole. Jaden smiled indulgently.
What a fine romance.
A fine romance?
Said Charlie, looking up.
Oh no, a doing time romance.
Thanks for listening to A Fine Romance, Part 2, Episode 8 of Miss Maple Mysteries. Written and performed by Kathy McClellan, with production by John Nolan. Additional voices by John Nolan, Rosemary Nolan, and William Ballack. Our company is Rag and Bone Puppet Theatre. and you can visit our website at ragandbone.ca.